Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to this Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio. People's Internet Radio, we are a viewer-funded station, guys, so if you like what we're doing, please hit the donate button. I'm also being simulcast today on Shake and Wake Radio. Thanks to Annie for everything she does. And boy, I'll tell you, we're going to get into a conversation today about common law. I'm joined by Nicholas Clare. Nick's done multiple videos on YouTube about common law. And be quite honest, it's something that I have a limited understanding of. I understand a lot about fractional banking and what's going on in our banking system and how it's a huge monopoly on our rights and our freedoms. But Nick's going to get into that in a few minutes. He's going to explain some of the things that he's doing and some of the things he's trying to bring forward to people. Nick is from England. He's from Wales. So welcome to the show. But before I let Nick talk, I just want to spend 1 minute talking about something that I have been following a lot lately. I spent probably 3 hours yesterday looking at reports from around the world on flooding events. And when I look at these events, I make sure that I go to the source and make sure the information is correct. I try and vet my information very quickly before I talk about it. But to say that we're seeing unbelievable flooding events going on around this planet right now would be an understatement. So something that I am following, and what's driving it, boy, that's a conversation that we could get into for a couple hours, and we don't have that kind of time today. But it's something that I'm really kind of watching, all these people that are being displaced and the people that are dying and the homes that are being destroyed, and my heart goes out to these folks. It really is a strange time right now as far as weather goes worldwide. But all that being said, I'm not getting into that one today. I'm going to be talking common law with Nick. Welcome to the show, Nick, and thanks for taking time to join me, and I'm looking forward to this chat.
Hi, Barry. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Where do you want to start, Barry?
Well, you're doing quite a few things right now. Why don't you start with just an explanation of what you've been doing for the last 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years of your life and how you're trying to get people to pay attention to the principles of common law.
Well, I can talk about the common law as I understand it. Hang on, just let me share this link that Steve's just sent me, because I want to put it on Facebook so other people can watch it if they want to. I'll be 2 seconds. I'm only one thing at a time person. I can't do more than one thing. Right. Principles of common law, or principles of natural law first. I think we can take it as read that piranha fish live in groups, right? And they're voracious little sods. They'll eat anything, but they don't eat each other. And that's the basis of natural law, as far as I can see it, is that members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other. If, say, with the example of piranha fish, if a group of piranha fish, if they all started to eat each other, that group would get smaller and smaller and smaller. There's only one left, which is not a group. And I'm advocating that that principle of social behaviour, that members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other, must apply to any group of creatures anywhere in the universe. Can we agree with that?
I'd agree.
All right. So, therefore, if there's a divinity which created the universe, it must be divine law, because the groups of creatures undoubtedly exist in the universe. So whatever kind of divinity might have created the universe, it must be divine law. So let's take that a stage further and imagine we're God, right, for example, and we want to create a new universe and we'd like to have a group of creatures in that universe. I'm saying that we'd have to obey that law in creating that universe, or there could not be a group of creatures in the universe. Can we agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that this natural law, that members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other, has to be agreed upon by any religion on this planet, in fact, all of them. And even if there's no God, no divinity or divinities, this natural law exists anyway. So all the world's religions and atheists and agnostics and any reasonable person basically has to agree with this principle. The principle being, again, members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other. There are exceptions to the rule. For example, when piranha fish have a feeding frenzy, if one of them gets injured in that frenzy, the rest of them will eat that one because it's not much good anymore. But they don't continue to eat each other. If they did, the group of piranha fish would get smaller and smaller and smaller till there's only one left, which is not a group. And with lions, when a new lion... hold on, there's a question in chat. How do I find out where the chat is?
I think you have to actually log into the station, I believe, to get into the chat room. And then you'd have to be accepted by somebody in there. I know Steve accepts
people into
the chat.
Do you want a link for that, Nick?
right? I've just shared the link on
No, that was a listening link only. I'll give you the station link.
Yeah. I've shared that link on my Facebook.
This is a different link.
Oh, you're sending me another link?
Yes.
In Skype?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And that's where the chat is?
Yes,
okay.
But you have to sign up for the station.
Oh, I'm already signed up to People's Internet Radio.
All you have to do is sign in.
Just sign in. Oh, God, it says it's not...
Yeah, praying mantis, they do eat their mates. You're right, Graham.
Okay, which ones? I can't log in for some reason. What is that? I've never had a problem with logging into that before. It's telling me it's an insecure selection.
Yes, it says that to everyone.
Sorry about this. What's the question?
I don't see a question except for the fact that praying mantises actually do eat their mates once they mate.
Just above that one.
And that's a correct statement. I don't see. Oh, have you heard of Manco 64, Nick, is the question in chat.
Manco 64?
Yeah, I hope I pronounced that correctly.
No, I haven't.
Manco 64. Apparently, just a comment in there that he knows quite a bit about banking. And maybe somebody that you might want to listen to, apparently.
So, okay.
I know I've listened to you, Nick, for years, and I've listened to a lot of your videos, and I know your knowledge of the banking system and how the tax systems work and how we're totally taking it up the butt from the government all every day of the week. What percentage we pay in taxes, the amount of interest that's being paid by government. We just looked at a link prior to the show on the Canadian government. Let's talk about that one for a minute and how much money we're actually paying out in interest in money that doesn't exist.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about how the money's created in the first place and then how they charge interest on this money, which is created out of nothing through fraud, right? And then how I'm saying at least 50% of everybody's income on this planet is paying interest to the banks. At least, probably maybe nearer 80%, but certainly at least 50%. Basically, the banks create money out of nothing. What they do, they have a piece of gold, and they'll lend that piece of gold to 10 different people. 10 different people have got a promissory note from the bank in the belief that each of those people has borrowed the same piece of gold. And each of those people is paying 10% per year interest on that loan of that piece of gold. So 10 times 10% per year is 100% per year. So by the end of 1 year, if I'm the banker, I've got the original piece of gold, which I've never parted company with, because all I've done is written 10 different promissory notes to 10 different people, each of whom think they've borrowed the same piece of gold. I've still got the piece of gold. And by the end of 1 year, I've got 10 promissory notes from each of those people promising me 10% of the value of that gold, which take those 10 pieces of paper together, makes 100%, which is another piece of gold, which as long as people believe in those bits of paper, I can swap for another piece of gold, which I do. So after the end of 1 year, I have one piece of gold plus another piece of gold. I've got two pieces of gold. So now if I can write 10 pieces of paper on each piece of gold, I proceed to do that. And I'm writing 10 pieces of paper on one piece of gold and 10 pieces on the other piece of gold. By the end of another year, I've got another 10 promissory notes for 10% each on one piece of gold and another 10 on the other piece of gold, which is another 200%, which I swap for another two pieces of gold. So now I've got four pieces of gold. And each year, every piece of gold that I've got doubles. So if I start with one, after 1 year, I've got two, and then four, and then eight, and then 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512. I've got 1,024 pieces of gold after 10 years.
Can I get in on this?
Yeah, go on.
I want to get in on this, man.
Yeah, me too.
Well, if we did that, we'd be in jail, buddy. Go ahead.
Well, I can demonstrate that we can put the bankers in jail from the common law, from the Piranha Principle. So we're going around it in several different directions all at once here. Hopefully it'll come together by the end of this hour before too long. But what they're doing essentially is pretending a piece of gold is 10 pieces of gold, right? This is absolute fundamental fact of fractional reserve banking, which the whole global banking system is based on, apart from in Arab countries, apparently. I don't know about their banking system, but it's certainly in the non-Arab world. That's how it's based. And pretending a piece of gold is 10 pieces of gold when it's only one piece of gold is pretending something is something which it's not. and lending it out and charging interest on it, the banks are gaining financially and everybody else is losing financially. Well, one definition of the simplest definition of criminal fraud that I've ever come across is that if you pretend something is something which it's not in order to gain financially or to make someone else lose financially, that is criminal fraud. So from the first time Rothschild printed more pieces of gold than they've got, printed more pieces of paper than they've got gold in 17 something, all the money in the world, all the paper money, the coins, and lately the virtual money in a computer, which is 97% of the money in the world nowadays, all of it has been created out of fraud. And they then lend this money and charge interest. In the UK, the interest on the money which the government has borrowed from the National Bank of England, which is called the Bank of England, it's allegedly nationalised, but it still has shareholders, and the shareholders get the interest on the national debt. We're paying £1 billion a week interest on the national debt that comes out of tax. Canada, I sent you a link, Barry. Where is it?
I had a look at that.
It's six hundred million a week.
Yeah,
which is not quite as much as England, but I don't think you've got as many people. America, it's worse. It's far worse in America. Where was it? Hold on. I'm just waiting for something to open here. Sorry.
Regardless, Nick, you know, this debt that's being incurred will never, ever be paid back. You know that, and I know that. It's being set up to collapse the dollar, which eventually will happen. But go ahead. America, I think it's $1.2 billion a week they go in debt. The last figures I believe I looked at, I might be wrong.
2018, it's $600 billion a year. So that's
okay, so about, a little over $2 billion a week. Or just about $2,300,000,000, you know, so it'd be about $1.8 billion a week they're going in debt every week.
I'm talking about the interest on the national debt which they're paying, which is $600 billion, right? That works out at it's over $10 billion, it's nearly $12 billion a week.
Wow. Well, like I said, you know what? This money is never gonna be paid back. Right now in Canada, our government came into power promising a balanced budget the second year they were in power. It was one of their election platforms. And now it's going to be 2054 before we have any chance of a balanced budget in Canada.
I remember the figure for calendar.
Like, what happened to that election promise, guys? Where'd all the money go?
Well, in Canada, it works out at $7,000 per week per family of four, right?
Being incurred in debt.
That's the interest on the national debt, which the government is paying to the Bank of Canada. That's not counting the interest that the person in their family, say you've got one breadwinner in a family of four, then out of their wages, that's $7,000 a week. $7,000 a year, which is $140 a week. That's the interest on the national debt, which is paid out of their tax, right? Now let's add on the interest on their mortgage. Okay. Well, if you borrow £100,000, I'll say pounds because I'm in England, over 30 years, you're going to pay back £300,000. So 2/3 of whatever you're paying on your mortgage, 2/3 of it is paying interest on a loan of money which doesn't exist, which is created out of fraud, right? So say half your wages is paying paying your mortgage or your rent. If you're paying rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. So still the same figure applies. You're still paying that same amount of interest out of your rent to the landlord, to who's paying it to the bank that the landlord borrowed the money off to get the mortgage on the property that you're renting, unless someone owns the property, in which case it's not the case. But most people, you know, they buy to let, or the government has paid for a property to be built for public housing, and they're paying interest on the national debt. So whatever way you look at it, 99% of people are paying interest on their mortgage or on their rent, and it's about 2/3 of it. Right. So that's covered the mortgage or the rent out of a person's wages and partially covered the tax being the national debt, the interest on the national debt paid to the same bankers, right? Essentially the same bankers. So now let's look at the fact that out of your tax, you're also paying the wages of all the people that work for the government. So you're paying interest on the mortgages of all the people that work for the government out of your tax. So that's another chunk to add on to it. So if you know, I mean, I don't know how much it is, probably another 10% of your tax is paying interest on the mortgages of all the people who work for the government. I don't know, 5%, 10%, it's a substantial figure. And then the last portion of your wages is what you spend in the shop. And you think, well, I'm not, you know, I live in a van, so I don't have a mortgage, I don't pay rent. And I'm not in the tax bracket. I'm well below the tax bracket. I'm on sickness benefit at the moment. I've got a sciatic pain in my leg and I can't work. But, So I'm well below the tax. So I'm not paying tax. I'm not paying mortgage. So all of my wages, or all of my income rather, is paying for food and various other items that I might need during the week. Well, if I go in the shop and buy myself a china cup, someone's been to the bank and they borrowed the money to buy the land to dig the china clay up from. And they're paying interest on that capital loan of that land, right? And I'm paying the interest on that capital loan out of the price of the cup. Someone else has borrowed the money to buy a great big digging machine to dig the china clay up from. And they're paying interest on that capital loan. And I'm paying interest on that capital loan also out of the price of the cup. Someone's borrowed the money to buy a great big lorry for the digger to load the china clay into to take it to the china clay factory. And I'm paying interest on that capital loan out of the price of that cup. Someone's borrowed the money to set up a china clay factory. Someone's borrowed the money to buy another lorry to take the china clay to the cup factory. Someone's borrowed the money to set up the cup factory. Someone's borrowed the money to buy another lorry to take the cups to the wholesaler. Another loan to set up the wholesaler. Another loan to buy a lorry to take the cups from the wholesaler to the retailer. And another loan to set up the retailer. So I'm paying interest on all those capital loans out of the price of that cup.
Mm.
I'm also paying interest on the mortgages of all the people that work for all those companies. I'm also paying interest on the national debt out of the tax of all the people that work for all those companies. Right? And going back to the tax proportion of my wages, if I were paying tax, I'd be paying the interest on the capital loans of all the companies that work as private contractors for the government, and all the interest on all their mortgages, and all the interest on their national debt out of their tax. It gets confusing at this point. You know, it's like a fractal. You can't really comprehend it. But what you can comprehend is that at least, at an absolute minimum, 50% of everybody's wages on this planet is paying interest to the banks.
I read a study by the Canadian Taxpayers Federation exactly what percentage of our income every year is going to the government in taxes in one form or another. And in Canada, if you're working 12 months of the year, you're working basically up to the end of August or the first week in September before you actually see any of that money. The rest of it is just taxes based on a yearly structure. So you're paying up till September every year, you're paying basically all your income to taxes. In September, October, November, December, you get to keep that money if you wanted to put it on a scale. And that's right from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. People don't understand that, you know, you got your federal tax, you've got your income tax, you got your provincial tax, you got your sales tax. Then you got taxes on everything you do. It doesn't matter what you do in society now, there's a tax on it. And if you add it up at the end of the day, man, there ain't much left for us, is there, Nick? But it sure pays for a lot of weapons to be built and a lot of wars to be fought.
Well, in principle, I don't have a problem paying tax to a government, provided it's paying for services, which may or may not be armed services. I'm not in favour of wars. We don't need them. But, I mean, let's just allow that for a second. But my point is that the interest on the national debt is paid out of tax, and the interest on your mortgage is paid out of your... My point, basically, Barry, is that I object strongly to paying interest on loans of money which doesn't exist, which was created out of fraud, to private, unelected, unaccountable bankers. Which
Where's the money ending up, Nick? It's ending up in the coffers of the big banks. It's just a way of raping the general population under the guise of a new tax. I mean,
right.
Canada.
And the government gets the blame for it.
Tax. Yeah, the government, Canada, go ahead.
The government gets the blame for it. Everybody says, why are we paying so much tax? But they don't look behind that and say how much interest is being paid. Out of your tax, you're paying what you're saying roughly, what, how much of your income in a year up until August?
August, the end of August.
Right, so that's 8 months, that's two-thirds. Well, most of that is paying interest to the banks. That's my point. And if you were to take away the interest, if you're only paying half your wages in interest to the banks, right, if we just abolished usury, which is the practice of charging interest on loans of money, if we just abolished usury, you'd only have to work half the amount of hours for the same standard of living.
Right. Well, right? You know, Nick, we're in such a rich country in Canada that no Canadian should be paying any kind of tax. But, boy, I'll tell you, it ain't set up like that. The corporations are raping our country, and Canadians are taking it up the butt just like anywhere else in the world right now. We're all being subjected to an outright form of tyranny. Go ahead.
Well, absolutely. And the point is that if usury was abolished, you wouldn't have to pay tax. The only reason taxes were raised in the first place in America, England, I don't know about Canada, but I don't know the history of Canada, but it was to pay the interest on the national debt, which was created when we went to war, right? That's why most countries have a national debt, is through fighting wars. And that brings us on to another point, which is that the same, I take it it's probably common knowledge that the Rothschild cartel, as I call them, the banking cartel, the global banking cartel, own all except for three national banks in the world, right, right. The last count. So imagine any country that goes to war has to borrow money from its national bank. So that cartel of bankers has been financing both sides of almost every war on the planet for the last 200 years.
I know.
I mean, I'm going to start using expletives in a minute to describe these people, but I can't because we're on air.
Well, really, if you study the bloodlines of the Illuminati and understand that there's only a very, very small group of people on this planet right now that are controlling all the money. You'll understand, you know, the power of the control of the dollar. You know, one thing we talk about a lot now is, you know, what's going to happen when they decide to collapse the dollar, Nick, because, you know, if you control the money, you control the population. And the banks, you know, they're pretty well running this planet right now. And when they want to collapse the dollar, because every country in the world is indebted, I don't think there's a country in the world that's in the green. If I'm wrong, correct me. But every country in the world owes money. What's going to happen when they decide to collapse the dollar?
Well, it becomes an open book then. If we can manage it to put these bankers in jail, which I think we can, in theory at least, something's happened to the sound. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Either they're going to create a new currency, which will be a global currency, and they will be charging just as much interest on that as they are presently, or we can put all those bankers in jail. I mean, they richly deserve it. They've created a fraud of monstrous proportions where everybody in the world is in debt to them. And mm-hmm. they're financing both sides of every war on the planet. They're financing the destruction of the planet through commerce and industry, which if they were to finance eco-friendly employment instead of destructive employment, we'd have a beautiful garden to live on this planet. And there's no reason on this earth I can think of why they shouldn't finance an eco-friendly way of living, which we can quite easily do. We've got technology to do it. We can make a beautiful place for ourselves and future generations, and we're running around like headless chickens destroying it because the banks are financing industry, which is destroying the planet. And if you're going to work, you've got no choice but to go to work destroying the planet or party to it, which comes on to... Go on.
Well, they should be held in a court of law criminally responsible for what they've done to the planet. I mean, just look at the last, 120 years of our history. And what we've done to this planet in the last 120 years and what this planet was prior to the onslaught of the Industrial Revolution and the arrival of plastics and chemicals and all kinds of stuff like nuclear power. These people are the same people that are behind the nuclear power industry, and look what that's doing to our planet. Nothing that these people do is beneficial. So they should be held liable in a court of law for destroying the one thing that's essential to all of our future, Nick. So why can't we just get them all in court and hang these guys? Because they're destroying this planet for our future children. Right now, there isn't much of a bright light on the horizon as far as the survivability of life on this planet. If you look at it realistically, in the next 30, 40 years, we have some major issues to deal with. And it just seems to be getting worse, and none of their attention is focused on this stuff. Why is that? Why do they want to kill us all?
I don't think they want to kill us. Basically, it seems to me that they have created an infinite supply of money out of nothing through fraud. Now, if you or I had an infinite supply of money, regardless of how we created it, I believe I certainly, and you, I'm quite certain, would spend it on investing in ways forward on this planet where we can all live together and share the resources equitably, not equally, but equitably, fairly between us, and live for many thousands of years on this planet. It's quite possible to do that, physically speaking. So why are these people who have an infinite supply of money financing wars and destruction of the planet? I think they actually enjoy other people's suffering, which is...
What is the end game? What is their end game? Where is their mentality or the lunacy in this situation where they're destroying this planet? Maybe they want to get rid of a bunch of us. According to the Georgia Guide Zones, they want to bring the population of the planet down to 500 million people, which by their standards is a manageable amount of people on the planet for the planet to be sustainable. But, you know, Nick, if we treated the planet properly right now, even though I think the population of the planet now is around, if I'm wrong, I think it's 7.9 billion or we're up around 8 billion people now on the planet. Well, you know, this planet could support 16 billion people if it was taken care of. But right now we're seeing the absolute destruction of our planet. And I don't know how else to say it to people, but realistically, if you go read reports, and I do all the time, and I try, like I said, I try and get to the bottom of reports, Nick, because there's a lot of bull crap out there right now. A lot of it. But yeah, if you get to the bottom of these reports and you can vet the information and you're finding out the information is accurate, then you've got to be alarmed at the drop off of species, what we're seeing happen in our oceans right now. Sometimes that's overplayed. I've read some articles where it was overplayed, but then I've read a lot of articles that are actually very, very accurate in their depiction of what's going on. So we're now, if we don't stop this lunacy of destroying the planet, which of course comes back to the bankers, comes back to all the industries that are destroying the planet, then we're looking at a pretty bleak future. So it's really important now that we make people understand who's controlling all the crap that's going on. And it comes right back to the bankers. Why? Why would they want to destroy something if they want to live here after we're gone? Where's the sense in that, Nick?
Well, I can't put myself in their minds, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately.
Well, yeah, but you're killing the planet. You want a place to live. You want to get rid of us all. This is their agenda. And yet, what are they going to have left to live on when we're all gone?
Well, we don't know, actually. Maybe there are people controlling the bankers who are maybe extraterrestrial. There are so many things we don't know. But what we do know is, as you just laid out, that the threat of environmental damage on this planet is very serious. And I think we can agree that it's as serious as the threat of world war, if not more serious.
I think it's more serious myself, but go ahead.
Right, right. So if we agree it's of that order of magnitude, to say the least, right, then I think we could agree, using common sense, that we should treat it in a similar manner. And like in the UK, last time we had a world war was the Second World War, and we had a state of emergency, wherein almost overnight, every man, woman and child who was able-bodied was either going to Germany and fighting Germans, or making guns and bombs and aeroplanes to do that, or knitting woolly hats and growing carrots for the war effort. Now, that means everybody united in a common cause. Well, if the threat of environmental damage is as serious as the threat of world war, I believe, in my heart, according to common law, we should treat it in a similar manner. We should declare a state of emergency for the environment globally. And considering that I'm not, as I say, I wouldn't mind paying a bit of tax to the government if they were doing a decent job. But to me, the government are the people who are supposed to enact the law, right? An act of parliament is supposed to be an enactment of the law. And the law states you must not injure your neighbour, which is going back to the Piranha Principle. So I'd like to go forward from that point in the common law and come to a point where I can prove, I believe, conclusively, that the world's governments are criminal and it's unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. And the only way they can stop being criminal is by providing all reasonably available resource for the environment, which is a state of emergency for the environment, because the threat is as serious as the threat of world war. So we agree that piranha fish live in groups. We agree that any group of creatures has to obey that law or can't exist as a group of creatures. And so coming into the common law, there's a law called the duty of care. And it's the same in USA, Canada. Well, it's the same in China. I know for a fact, I've never lived to China, never lived in China, never visited. And I don't know the first thing about Chinese law, but I do know that there are X million or perhaps billion people there and they're living together. So they must be obeying that law. And in English law, the duty of care states you must take reasonable care to avoid acts or omissions which you can reasonably foresee would be likely to injure your neighbour. And you can look that up any way you want. It was a case, it arose in a, I mean, that law has existed ever since microbes lived in groups together on this planet and probably maybe previously on other planets in other universes. But it's an inherent natural law. It's like saying, did the law of gravity exist before Newton wrote it down? Right? That law has existed time immemorial. Mm. And it will exist in the future as long as there are groups of creatures in the universe. It can't not exist. The duty of care says you must take care not to injure your neighbour. If you damage the environment which your neighbour lives in, you're injuring your neighbour. Now, obviously we're going to do some damage. I've only got to walk across a field and I'm going to step on some bugs and kill them and bend some blades of grass over and injure them, you know. But my point would be, it states reasonable. You must take reasonable care to avoid acts or omissions which you can reasonably foresee would be likely to injure your neighbour. So the question arises then, what is a reasonable level of damage and destruction that we're going to do to this planet in our daily lives? I don't know what that level is. but I'm pretty sure, like I'm 99.99 recurring to infinity percent sure that we've gone past that level of what's reasonable and necessary.
Mm.
And what I'm interested in is getting back to a level which is necessary and reasonable. For example, if we're going to have public transport, for example, we need to produce steel to make buses, and we're going to be running engines of some kind or another, so we're going to do some damage. But when you look at the amount of traffic going down a road, and there are 50% of the vehicles are cars with one person in them, and you could put those 50 people in one bus, and instead of 50 engines, you've got one. Instead of 250 tyres, which is four tyres per vehicle plus a spare tyre, which is 250, you know, you've only got six tyres on a bus, one engine. You're taking up a whole lot less room on the road, which means you can have narrower roads and wider pavements and trees planted down the roads if you have public transport rather than private transport in urban areas. Where, I mean, obviously in rural areas, you need private transport. You can't have, it's not efficient to have buses running about all over the place. Plus, if you're a builder, or a plumber or electrician, you need to carry your tools around. You can't do that on a bus. You've got to have a van. You know, there are obviously exceptions, but like there are exceptions with piranha fish injuring each other. So where I'm going with this is that the government, the law says you must avoid acts or omissions likely to injure your neighbour. That is the law, right? That's not legislation. That is law. And the parliament of any country is paid by the people through taxation to enact the law. An act of parliament is supposed to be an enactment of the law. So if they've enacted legislation which allows unnecessary and unreasonable environmental damage and destruction to the extent that that threat is now as serious as the threat of world war, then they've acted unlawfully. And if they've done it knowingly or intentionally, then it's criminal. Well, I wouldn't argue that any government is doing it intentionally, but they're certainly doing it knowingly. And they might or might not be doing that under the influence of bankers and blackmail and paedophilia, you know, that kind of blackmail and all those kind of things, which, thank God, President Trump seems to be dealing with the arrests on child trafficking. There have been thousands of arrests on child trafficking and his 50-odd thousand indictments. So I do think, you know, there is hope, Barry. When you say what hope is there, I do think there is hope that these people, I think their names are all on sealed indictments. Whether or not they're going to be acted upon or not is another matter. But going back to the common law again, the world's governments, without shadow of doubt in my mind, are reckless and criminal. They have knowingly passed unlawful legislation. They've knowingly acted. The law says you must avoid acts or omissions likely to injure your neighbour. They've knowingly acted to allow damage and destruction of the environment to the extent it's as serious as the threat of world war. They've knowingly failed to control the pollution damage. That's an act and an omission. If they hadn't failed to control the pollution damage, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. So the world's governments are reckless and criminal by act and omission in their duty of care for the environment. Never mind all the other crimes they're reckless and criminal about, but that one we can all agree on, whether we're capitalist, communist, socialist, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Islam, Hindu, whatever, or an atheist, we all live on the same planet. And so I'm looking for common ground. And the common ground is we all live on the same planet and it is being destroyed. So I'm saying that the law, the common law, says that the governments of the world are reckless and criminal. It also says that it's unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. If I was to pay you to commit a crime, Barry, then I'd be breaking the law, probably more so than you would be by committing that crime. Because as an employer, if I was to employ you to commit that crime, i.e. to pay you to commit that crime, you might have a mortgage and a family to pay to support. So you can't refuse to carry out my request or my demand to do that work damaging the environment. You have there is an undue influence upon you, whereby if you refuse to carry out that employment, you're going to lose your house and your family will be thrown out on the street. So it's not a free choice for the working person to go to work knowingly damaging and destroying the planet. It's undue influence and coercion. I can come back to that in a second. But the point is, the governments of the world have knowingly passed unlawful legislation allowing multinational companies to damage and destroy the planet. They have knowingly omitted to control the pollution damage. The governments of the world are therefore reckless and criminal by act and omission in their duty of care for the environment. It is unlawful to pay someone to commit crime, quite simply. And whatever legislation they're saying, they make care to make up regarding tax, saying you have to pay tax to the government to allow the government to carry on doing whatever it's doing. Legislation is always subservient to law. I can prove that by saying that if there was, if you and I were in the street somewhere, and heaven forbid someone on the other side of the street got a gun out and started shooting people, right? It would be a lawful act for one of us to shoot that person and stop them. Whereas normally to shoot someone in the street is murder, right? So imagine now, just take it a stage further. Imagine that person on the other side of the street is my twin brother, Now, I'm the one with the gun. You don't have the gun. I have got a gun and I've got a license to use it. But I'm not going to shoot him because he's my twin brother. And he's shot, this other person has shot a couple of people. He's aiming at another one. It would then be a lawful act for you, without a license, to use reasonable force, take the gun off me yourself, and shoot him yourself in a public place, mm-hmm. which normally would be assault, battery, theft of a firearm, unlawful possession and use, endangering public life, discharging a weapon in a public place, and murder. And normally, for you to go out and knock someone on the head, steal the gun and shoot someone in a public place, all those offences would be committed. But in the circumstance where that person who you've just shot is shooting people, it would be a lawful act, proving, I believe, that what is lawful overturns what is legal. It is illegal to assault someone, batter them, steal their gun and shoot someone in a public place. All those things are illegal, but it is lawful to commit all those acts in that circumstance. Am I making sense?
Absolutely.
All right, so what is lawful overturns what is legal. The Criminal Damage Act, Section 1 in UK states, if you damage or destroy another person's property without a lawful excuse, you commit an offence of criminal damage. The question arises again, what is lawful excuse to damage or destroy another person's property? Well, say, example, if a house is on fire and you kick the door down to get someone out, right? It is illegal to kick someone's door down, but it's lawful to do it in that circumstance. Again, it's the same thing. It applies right through the law. What is reasonable is what is lawful, despite any act of parliament. So if they make up legislation saying you have to pay tax, and if you don't, you're going to go to prison, we can challenge that and say, no, in the circumstance where the government is criminal, it is unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. Therefore, it is unlawful to pay tax. Do you understand my argument? Because what is lawful trumps what is legal. Does that come across? Does it make sense?
Barry, you're muted.
Hello?
Barry, you're muted.
Oh, geez, I'm sorry. That's bad, isn't it, Steve? Thanks for reminding me. I do that sometimes so I don't have noise in the background. I was muted, Nick. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, and I'm following your train of thought.
It's
how they get away with it is what we got to educate people how to stop.
Well, let's look at paying tax, right? As I said before, I would have no objection to paying tax to a lawful government. But if I go to a builder and ask them to build me a roundhouse and they built me a square one, I'm not expected to pay for it, right? If I go to a government and I'm employing them to enact the law and they don't enact the law, they make unlawful legislation allowing multinational companies to damage and destroy the planet that I and my children for future generations have to live on, then I would not be expected to pay that government for that alleged service. It's not a service, it's a complete disservice. So how many people do we know between us, or how many people in general like paying tax? Under these circumstances, I don't think many people do like paying tax. So, and how many people believe that the government is criminal? Loads of people do. But to prove it, and to prove that it's unlawful to pay tax, and to make that information public, I mean, I don't believe that I've said anything that a 10-year-old child couldn't understand. I might have said it in a roundabout sort of way, because, you know, but it's very simple in essence. The law says you must not injure your neighbour. That is the same as the Piranha Principle, which is natural law, which all the world's religions have to agree with, right? It says you must not injure your neighbour. It also says that it's unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. It also says that the government is criminal, so therefore it's unlawful to pay tax until the government stops being criminal or gets out of the way and allows someone else in who can do the job properly. Well, if the threat of environmental damage is as serious as the threat of world war, and the reason why the government is criminal is because they've knowingly passed legislation to allow that to happen and knowingly failed to control it, then the only way that government can stop being criminal in that particular respect is to provide all reasonably available resources for the environment. Which, if the threat is as serious as the threat of world war, it's the same amount of resource for the environment as would be to fight a world war.
Right. So I guess my question would be, then why is organizations like the United Nutcases, or more commonly known as the United Nations, declaring a worldwide state of an emergency as far as their environment goes? Because right now, it doesn't take more than 3 or 4 hours of hard research on the computer to understand just how much trouble our planet's in. So why do we not hear international bodies like this that are supposed to be looking after the betterment of man screaming at the top of their lungs? Why are they not going over and stopping what's going on with Fukushima? There's just one example of many of almost doomsday scenarios right now that are being played out on the human race, and nothing is being done about it. Why? We can come back to what you're talking about, Nick. Go ahead.
Fukushima, I advocated at the time that it should be an international effort to deal with it. And the Japanese government said, no, we don't want international interference in our affairs. And everybody kept quiet for some reason. I don't know why. I couldn't possibly answer that question why.
Well, the silence on Fukushima right now should be an international disgrace. I mean, TETCO is not looking after the problem. They have no answers to the problem. We have a situation developing over there that people think that they've heard the end of Fukushima. Well, we haven't heard the beginning of Fukushima yet.
We haven't. No,
so, you know what, Nick? Talking about environmental damage, you know, the governing bodies of the planet have allowed the proliferation of nuclear power. And above all other things that are damage our environment on this planet, we could talk about plastic, we could talk about oil, we could talk about all the things that we're doing to damage our environment. Nuclear power is heads and tails above any issue as far as I'm concerned. Because really, we're only, what, 50 or 60 or 70 years into the proliferation of nuclear power, but now we see what it's doing to our planet. Fukushima is just one example of many, many, many nuclear power plants that could have the same effect on our environment. So what are we doing to the planet right now? Why is there not an international cry to eliminate all nuclear power on this planet? Because it's going to kill the human race eventually. Just an example of what you're talking about. Go ahead.
To answer the question about the United Nations, you need to go into the history of who started it and why. And I can recommend a video by a woman called Dr. Lima Rabo. Would you like a link to it? You can put it into the show. I've actually
watched that video and understand how it was formed from the League of Nations prior to the Second World War. I've studied it quite a bit, Nick. But yeah, share the link in chat here. It'd be good video for people to watch. But I did watch part of that one.
I'll put it into the into Skype because I can't get into that chat at the moment. If I put it into Skype, can you share it from there?
Yeah, I can.
There, it's there now. She goes into it from an angle of how the world's governments are, well, not the world's governments, but the powers behind the governments are trying to control the world's food supply and medicine. Basically, they're making all natural health remedies illegal. That's what they're trying to do because they want to sell Big Pharma. It's another whole subject, but she goes into the history of the United Nations from that angle, and it's a very worthwhile video to watch, in my opinion. So that would explain why they're silent, because they're not. That's not actually on their agenda. It's their front. You know, if you have a crime, a criminal organisation, you have a front which appears to be legal, and behind that front, you get on with all of the devious deals what you want to get on with. So that's what the United Nations is, the front for a criminal enterprise, basically, it seems. I'm making a broad statement there, but that's what it seems to be, if you believe what she says in her video.
We don't have time really to get into the United Nations today, Nick, because I've studied it a lot, but you're absolutely spot on. It's a criminal organization, but go ahead.
But regarding nuclear power, I'm not personally against it in essence, but I am against building nuclear power stations on known fault lines, which is absolutely absurd, and that's why most of these accidents are happening. And look at all down the west coast of America, the San Andreas Fault. They built nuclear power stations all down it. The Japanese Fukushima one was built on a known, it's the Ring of Fire, it's the Pacific Ring of Fire. It's one of the most notorious areas for earthquakes on the planet. And they built three nuclear power stations on it. I would say that actually the most urgent issue to deal with regarding pollution is car exhaust pipes in urban areas. Because a car exhaust pipe is emitting carbon monoxide, and carbon monoxide causes permanent brain damage. It is emitted at child height, right? Mm. Now, they've come out with all this like technology about catalytic converters and lead-free petrol and all that. But the fact is, it takes 5 miles for a catalytic converter to warm up and to start operating efficiently. And in urban areas, 80% of car journeys are under 5 miles, so it doesn't work.
Nice.
And they've basically poisoned at least three generations of children, urban children, with permanent brain damage due to carbon monoxide poisoning. And carbon monoxide poisoning occurs because carbon monoxide sticks to hemoglobin 200 times more strongly than oxygen does.
Right.
So which means
it's a gift. It's a gift that keeps on giving. Well, I'm going to push back on nuclear power, though, Nick. I think nuclear power is the most insane thing that the human race has ever allowed to be put onto this planet. And no nuclear power plant is a safe nuclear power plant, in my estimation. We talk about them being built on fault lines. Well, I've done studies and I've overlaid transparent maps of every known and active fault line on the planet, then every known and active nuclear power plant on this planet today. And if you overlay the two on top of each other, we're committing suicide as a human race. because these fault lines are all going to move again. Some of them are going to create catastrophic earthquakes, and you have nuclear power plants all built within a striking range. Where is the sanity? And what does it take? Another couple Fukushimas for the human race to wake up to the fact that if we don't get rid of it, it's going to kill us all? Nick, no nuclear power is good nuclear power in my world, buddy. There's so many other ways that we can generate power without unleashing the sun on the planet Earth, period. And we've got to get rid of it, buddy, because we're only starting to see, like I said, we've only been into nuclear power since when? The end of the Second World War, nuclear power was presented to the public, I think it was 1952, was it, you know, the first talk about nuclear power plants. Sold to the public as a new, great, perfect way to create power, never have another problem as long as we live. And we look at all the problems being created by nuclear waste dumped in the oceans and our fault. I mean, it's just everywhere. It doesn't matter where you look right now. Nuclear power plants are having scrams. Go on the internet and look at the scrams every day at every nuclear power plant in the world. And it's insanity, man. We've got to get rid of that. We don't need it. We've got everything we need to provide every bit of energy that this planet ever needs is right over top of our heads. We don't need nuclear power. We got to get rid of it, buddy. Period. No nuclear power is good nuclear power. That's all I'll say about that. Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with you, but,
it drives me nuts, Nick.
I'd like to have those overlays if you could send them to me, because that on its own is ground for recklessness.
Well, it is, you know. Nick. And you can do that. I've challenged other radio hosts to do the same study that I did. Just punch it up on your computer and print it off on a piece of transparent paper. It takes 10 minutes, guys. Do it yourself right now and lay them over top of each other. And you'll literally, Nick, you'll fall off your chair, because the first time I did it, I'm going, well, these people know that these are active fault lines. They know these fault lines are there. Why would you even consider building something that's subjected to breakdowns of cooling systems and destruction of pipe and buildings falling down to a massive earthquake when that possibility exists? And it exists really close. We could talk about the San Madre up the center of the United States of America and the Mississippi River Delta. How many nuclear power plants? How many chemical plants? And in 1811 and 1812, that area created three earthquakes all over 8.1, 8.2, and an 8.4 in a 3-month period. Well, if that same event happened right now, Nick, you could be literally looking at the extinction of life in North America. Jeez. One major event. And we could talk about the Cascadia off the west coast of the United States of America. How many nuclear power plants are exposed to that potential 100-foot tsunami that fault line is going to create when it shifts? These are all geological events that are going to happen. And we have laid down measles all over the planet saying, hey, you can't do that anymore. You can't have that 9.2 magnitude earthquake. And you could not create this 100-foot tsunami because we built nuclear power plants here. It's insanity, Nick.
It's
insanity. It's one subject that I talk about a lot. Because you know what? We're leaving a pile of crap for our kids to look after. And I'm saying that because I study all the scrams that are coming out of nuclear power plants. You look at the one that just happened in New Brunswick, man, with the flooding in North Carolina. Look at the coal ash that went into the Atlantic Ocean, the tons and tons and hundreds of tons of mercury, arsenic, and lead that went into our Atlantic Ocean because of that flood. We've got to stop doing what we're doing, and we've got to stop and get back to totally natural resources that the planet provides for us. Cannabis is a subject that I talk about for hours, Nick, and it has an answer to about 90% of the problems we're facing right now. Period. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that the same mentality is responsible for these nuclear power stations being built on fault lines as is responsible for fracking. That's my pet peeve at the moment. It's, well, carbon monoxide, car poisoning, I think, is rendering people unable to think critically. It's causing permanent brain damage. I think that has to be dealt with, you know, and then we've got a chance that people, if we have people with fresh air in their lungs, they might have a chance of critical thinking. But fracking, it is undeniable that, well, they only get 10% of the resource out that's down there, whether it's oil or gas, they only get 10% out. And that's in the lifetime of the well, which is perhaps 5 years. So if that well starts to leak, 90% of what's down there is going to carry on leaking for the foreseeable future, and it's going to leak to the surface, right? Now, the wells will leak. They all leak. There is no question about it. The known failure rate of a cement seal on an oil well, whether it's a fracking well or a conventional well, is 100%. They will all leak because the cement seal will deteriorate. Basically, they drill a hole for the oil well, whether it's a conventional or otherwise. They drill a hole and they drop a steel pipe down the hole. And a steel pipe, the hole has to be, you're typing, Barry, sorry. The hole has to be, it's hard. You need to get a quiet keyboard, bro.
Listen, Nick, we only got about 5 minutes left right now, so I'm going to let you finish this thought, and then I'm going to let you share a little bit with people, and then we're going to have to close out the first hour of the show here, guys. Go ahead.
Okay, well, basically, they drill a hole, they drop a steel pipe down the hole. The hole has to be bigger than the steel pipe. If you've got a 6-inch pipe, you've got a 9-inch hole. If you've got a 12-inch pipe, you've got a 15-inch hole. If you've got a 2-foot pipe, you've got a 2-foot-6 hole. So there's a gap around the outside of the pipe. And when you go down 1 or 2 kilometers and you hit this high pressure oil or gas that's down there, it comes shooting up that hole because of the weight of a billion tons of rock on top of the gas that's down there.
And it will
come up the inside of the pipe and it will go up the outside of the pipe. They pump liquid cement down the middle of the pipe. It gets to the end. It turns around the corner. Comes back up the outside. And it's supposed to set and form a perfect seal and prevent egress of oil or gas into the atmosphere or anywhere else. Well, that cement seal fails. And the industry figures are 5%, 1 in 20 fail immediately when they're brand new, 10% have failed after a year, 60% have failed after 20 years, and they will all fail eventually. The cement seal will deteriorate. The steel will rust. The earth will move. All different reasons why that cement seal will fail. But the reasons it fails immediately are quite extraordinary. And the first reason is that on the way down, to go down 2 kilometres, you're going through maybe 100 or possibly 200 different kinds of rock, each of which have got different adhesion properties, different pH values, different absorption. You try stick clay, cement to clay. It doesn't stick. So any layer of clay that you're going through, which is basically compressed shale, it doesn't work, right, at all. And next, you've got other layers of rock, intermediate layers of rock before you hit the bottom, which have also got high pressure fluids in them, which are injected into that hole that you've just drilled and which the cement will encounter on its way to the surface. So the cement is compromised by being mixed with high pressure oil, gas, whatever is down there. But the most important reason I can see is that as soon as the cement comes out of the bottom of that pipe, where there's high pressure oil and gas, it is mixed with high pressure oil and gas. And before it's even turned around the corner to start its journey up the outside of the pipe and mix with all these different other fluids which ingress into the hole and the different kinds of rock that it encounters and is supposed to stick to forever, it's mixed with high pressure crude oil or gas, which is not the gas or the oil which you get out of your tap. It's crude gas. It's got all kinds of nasty chemicals in it. And this cement is mixed. How is that cement seal ever going to work? And they're drilling a rate of 10 wells per square mile.
You know, right? The groundwater is being attacked. I know I've read studies about it in the States, Nick, and it's insanity. Just goes to add to the insanity that they're pulling everywhere on us. So listen, buddy, you know what? This hour's gone really quick, Nick. And I could talk another hour. There's so many things I wanted to talk with you about, but hour's gone. So I want to thank you for joining and give people a real quick plug where you can be reached, where they can follow you, and then I'll say goodbye for this time.
Okay, well, just type into Google Reclaim the Law. I've got a Reclaim the Law channel on YouTube, one on WordPress. My name on Facebook is Nicholas Clare, N-I-C-H. I'll put a link to my Facebook page. I've got one on fracking aquifers, which is all about fracking and aquifers. Oh, you've got another hour coming up, Barry, is that right?
Yes, I have another hour coming up.
All right, so I can put those links in a second. Just to say, it's unlawful to pay tax until there's a global state of emergency for the environment. That's my line, basically. And also, one other thought, the mortgage contract is forcing people to go to work, destroying the planet, forcing people to commit crime. It's a void contract. Any contract that forces a person to commit crime is void. The mortgage contract is void. All you people out there that are in danger of losing your house due to not being able to pay your mortgage because your company's gone out of business because of financial whatever bloody blah going on, it's an unlawful contract, right? And people need to know that.
Thanks for joining me, buddy.
Cheers, Barry.
Well, thanks for joining me, Nick. And I know you could go for another hour talking, and I'm going to get you back in here in the near future, and we'll carry on this conversation. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks,
Barry. And guys, hang in. I'm going to be talking Shifting Gears, and we're going to talk Canadian politics and the lunacy inside our Canadian government, which is the same agenda being played out worldwide. Canadian Combat Coalition are joining me for the next hour. Please stay tuned, and I'll be back in 4 or 5 minutes. Well, welcome back, guys. The second hour of the Big Puzzle. Sorry about the delay there, but that's Skype for you. They always seem to have something up their sleeve. I'm joined for the second hour here by the Alberta president of the Canadian Combat Coalition. Wynne has joined me for a conversation about what the group is doing and what they're trying to get the message across to Canadians about. How you doing, Wynne?
Hello. Are you back now?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, that's better.
Well, that's a lot better. It's kind of hard to do a show with the West Edmonton Mall in the background, Wynne. But hey, thanks. thanks for, maybe if you could turn your volume up just a little bit or speak a little bit closer to the phone, we'll be able to hear you.
Yeah. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, we can hear you, but if we can get a little bit more volume out of you somehow, that would help.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyways, why don't you tell people about yourself and tell them a little bit about the Canadian Combat Coalition and what you guys are trying to do.
Here in my brother chapter, we are helping like homeless people. We try to, you know, walk around. We associate with the soldiers of ODN too. They are like a pretty decent patriot group, right? We connected to them, and then sometimes they, you know, especially like on long weekends when they have like something to do, and then they let us know, and then we head out with them, and then you know, give homeless people socks, gloves, pants, warm clothes, and then sometimes like cookies, hot coffee, things like that. And then when it comes to rallies time, you know, we get together and then we show our support. Like you know, we try to get together as one. And then you know, we support the city, we support the community, we support our justice system. This coming November 2nd, we're gonna be having like a rally for Tory Stafford's justice, because the young girl, an 8-year-old girl who got murdered like in 2009 in Woodstock, Ontario. She got raped. She got brutally raped, and then she got like murdered like horribly. So we are going to be standing up for her.
Yeah, there's the lady that did this, folks. Her name is Carly Lynn McClintock, and she was sentenced to life in jail in Canada with no chance of parole. And the Liberal government, in their wisdom, and our court system and our judiciary system, in their wisdom, released Carly to a healing lodge in Saskatchewan about 7 months ago. The public wasn't even aware of this transfer of this hardcore criminal serial killer. And this has gone on behind the backs of Canadians. The community wasn't even aware of this lady's presence in a healing lodge that has no security, has no fences. She's in a room now with a nice big bed and a color TV when this woman created or perpetrated some of the worst crimes I've ever heard of. And that's just one example of what's going on inside of the justice system when they can rationalize this kind of a move. Where is the rationale? What's going on with this woman and the woman's family, this girl's family that are sitting back and watching the government release this woman to a healing lodge after 8 years of her sentence being served? Something's definitely wrong in our system. What do you think?
Oh, I don't really think something's wrong with our justice system. I think that something's wrong with our leaders. We need to change, you know, we need to put the right man in the power so that our system can be the real system. You know, without the right leaders, our system is nothing. Doesn't mean anything. It's just a basic rule, right? When we have, when we put the right people, like, you know, in the power, the system will become like a great system. I think that liberals is trying to, you know, destroy like everything in the, you know, within the government. This is what they are trying to do. They're gonna bring like you know, a whole bunch of people who, you know, who one day will kill us all, right? For the, you know, for the agenda, for the power. That thing is you know, not good. That thing is really destroying, you know, all Canadians. You know, a lot of like Canadians, especially like our Chinese community, like Burmese community, they came to Canada like for a better future, a better life, right? And when people, liberals, when they're doing like that, you know, we lose our future too. We got no choice but to stand up and fight. That's about it, Brother Barry.
Well, absolutely. Right now, when Canada is in a lot of trouble, and the problem is that a great deal of percentage of Canadians really still haven't grasped the problems that are going on in our country, because, of course, they rely on outlets like CBC and CTV for their information. And while people are doing that, they're never really going to get the true information about what's going on in our government. But right now, our country is in more trouble than I thought I would ever see in my lifetime. And the Sons of Odin are a group that I do support. They're true patriots. They're calling it just like it is. I'm listening to Maxime Bernier talk a lot. I believe that's one of the best things that's happened to Canada in the last little while, is another viable political party coming to the forefront in Canada and offering other opinions on what's going on. What are your thoughts on Maxime Bernier?
I would say he's going to be a great leader. He's going to change a lot of things. He's good for everybody, especially good for every citizen. Good for I would say good for all Canadians. We're supposed to be leading the world like long time ago. Liberals screw it all. We gain a lot of respect, right, guys, all around the world, right? As soon as Trudeau, took the power, he ruined everything, and we don't have that much respect. Yeah,
we're the laughing stock. When we are the laughing stock of the world now. I mean, anybody that looks at Justin Trudeau is asking themselves, how did this clown ever get to be elected as the Prime Minister of Canada? It's a question I ask myself every day. How did people elect this guy? Well, he said the right things. And of course, people don't look into the history of Pierre Elliott Trudeau and what kind of prime minister he was. And if you look into his history, you'll understand exactly where Justin's coming from. He is the worst thing that's ever happened to Canada. And what he's done already to Canada is going to take years and years and years to repair. But yeah, Maxime Bernier to me is a breath of fresh air in Canada because it is another viable political party. And what I see happening here now, Wynn, is we have another voice in Parliament that can get information out to the public that wouldn't be given out through Andrew Scheer. Because to me, Scheer is nothing but a puppet. He is globalist. I do not like the man. His support of the climate, of the Paris Climate Pact says it all about Andrew Scheer. I really like what Maxime Bernier is saying. I went and looked at his platform. I am not a kind of person that trusts politicians. And I know all our lives they've lied to us. But I think we almost have a Donald Trump type of event going on in Canada. I can see tremendous support getting behind this guy already. So it's a good thing for Canada.
Yeah, you're right too, Brother Barry. In my opinion, I would say Maxime Bernier a lot better than globalist Andrew Scheer. This guy gonna destroy. His footstep is exactly like Justin Trudeau, right? For sure, he gonna ruin Canada for another 4 years. He don't want to do that. I would say I'd rather go with the Maxime Bernier because his footstep is exactly like Donald Trump. I know that he's kind of new guy. He got a bad history, within his political party when he was in PTC. But this one is we gotta pick only one, okay? We don't have many choices. If we go split voting, we're gonna another 4 years gonna be behind again. We're losing so much time already, brother.
Well, we're at a critical time right now when it's either do or die. If the Liberal government manages to secure another majority government for 4 years, Canada will not be the country that you and I grew up in 4 years from now. So we're kind of right now fighting for our life. But I see this new rise of a party, if anything, will probably guarantee that the Liberals won't get a majority in the next government. And even if they were to get a minority, which I hope they don't, it would be a good situation because they won't be able to ram down our throats, the legislation they've been ramming down our throats in the last 3 years. What they've done to this country, man. Why is Justin Trudeau not in jail? Huh? And I call him Trudeau because that's what he is. Why is he not in jail? Where's law in Canada? Why is he not being charged for treason? First thing I ask myself every day, because what he's done is blatant acts of treason against Canada. So why is he not in jail? What's wrong with our system?
Well, there is one thing I can tell you that why he's not. He isn't in jail yet. Our Conservative Party is so weak. They don't have guts, to face Justin Trudeau. Republicans in the United States, they got guts. They stand up and then they fight hard for justice. And our Conservative Party are not like that. I would say they got they got no guts. Softball. They need to have some courage so that they can stand up for themselves and for other people. I think that these people, they also sell out I would say a different name. I would say another Liberal. This it's not gonna work out. So I think we gotta go with PPC, People's Party of Conservatives, right? Am I right?
Well, I've looked at one poll that just came out 2 days ago on support for Maxime Bernier and his new party. And I've looked at one, and they're running at about 18% now, possible support.
You have another caller, Barry.
I think, go ahead.
So you have another caller.
Yeah.
Okay, put him in. Is that Dan Dubois? Because I know he's going to join me today.
Yeah. How's it going, Barry?
Is this Dan?
Yes, it is. Dan Dubois.
Well, you're the president of the Canadian Combat Coalition. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I got to say, man, I consider this an honor to be on your show, brother.
Well, the honor's all mine. But, yeah, I'm talking with Wynn here about some of the things they've been doing in Alberta. But why don't you bring our listeners up to exactly what you've been doing and some of the things your group's involved in?
Well, we support pretty well any positive direction that any patriots are going into. We've done our biggest rally was just last past July, 14th and 15th. It was in Ottawa, and it was a totally political rally. It was a more or less get rid of Trudeau type rally, where we had numerous speakers from all different cultures speak, you know, and they spoke about, you know, their issues with the Trudeau government, the way it's going right now.
Mm. Everybody has an opinion on Trudeau right now, Dan, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
I've never seen so many pissed off Canadians. And I talk about this every show, and I'm going to just talk about it for 2 seconds. Dan, you got to go out and get yourself a T-shirt that says Trudeau for Prison 2018 and start wearing it in public everywhere you go. Because I keep talking about this every week. But, man, I'll tell you, I have started this last week alone. I'm not lying. At least 50 or 60 conversations with people that I don't know simply because I'm wearing a T-shirt with a statement that everybody can relate to. So, guys, go out and get a T-shirt made up, Trudeau for Prison 2018, and watch how your public responds to it. It's been inspiring. Go ahead, Dan.
Awesome. That's an awesome, awesome idea. You know, like you say, that's a really interesting way to get the conversation going. Because, let's face it, I think the biggest detriment to Canada right now is the lack of awareness and the fact that people don't want to get involved. Canadians are apathetic. We're not used to turmoil on our country. We're not used to, like, terrorism is something new to us. Many believe that we're not even under any kind of attack. They don't see this immigrant issue as an invasion. They see it as immigration. But fact of the matter is, it's illegal immigration, and you don't come from a peaceful country wearing Nike running shoes and holding a cell phone and carrying a Gucci bag and claim refugee status. That's, to me, no, what you are is you're a criminal because you broke federal law and you crossed a border illegally and should be dealt with justifiably. You know, they should be expelled from the country right away.
Absolutely. And if people knew the facts about this border crisis that we're experiencing in Canada right now, 65% of the people that are showing up our borders and claiming refugee status have already attained a safe refugee status in the United States of America. But they're simply coming into Canada because our prime ministers welcome them all in and they look at our programs. The moment they walk across the border, they get free medical. They get free dental. Get a load of this, guys. They get free dental. I'm a Canadian citizen. I've been in this country all my life, and I paid my share of taxes, more than I think I should, but I have paid taxes to this government, and I don't get free dental. But an illegal alien, a legal immigrant, walks across our border, claims refugee status, and immediately is given a welfare check, is given money to live, is put up in hotels. There's 40,000 people right now in Toronto area hotels, illegal immigrants, being paid for by Canadian taxpayers, illegals. And these people, Dan, are looking at some of them 20, 30 before they get a hearing on their status. So in other words, for the next 12 years, they'll be in Canada as illegal immigrants being paid for and supported by our system. They're not going to be able to get jobs. What the heck is going on in our country, guys? Well, it's outrageous to say the least. And my blood is boiling past the point of I don't have any blood left to boil, guys, because this is lunacy. Go ahead.
Well, there are things that I don't understand. I don't understand why we're putting illegal refugees before Canadians, because Canadians are dying of some froze to death in the Toronto streets last year. I think it was seven of them. Yep. Why can't we put these people up in hotels? They're Canadians, after all. And how does a country that owes trillions of dollars afford to give billions of dollars away to foreign countries? Like, how is that even possible?
How do they justify taking $95 million out of our pension fund and giving it to India to fund low-cost housing? Just one example. And you know what, Dan? Yeah. We could talk about 30 or 40 examples. I could pull up a list right now of donations made by the Canadian government since Justin Trudeau took power. And it's just absolutely outrageous. Everywhere our money is going is to countries that support some of the most heinous human rights violations in the world. Go ahead.
Well, he's a globalist. That's clear. He's of the UN agenda that's been clearly compromised by, I think it's 57 Arabic countries.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they rule the United Nations. And they have a lot of money, and they so that gives them a lot of power. And there's a clear agenda out there, an Islamic agenda out there. So it's motivated by a religious belief, and it's not a religion, but it's spreading like a cancer. And our governments, because they're weak, have let themselves get bought and paid for, and are letting it happen, and matter of fact, in Trudeau's case, are welcoming it with open arms. That's mm-hmm. the problem.
Well, what do you think? What do you think about that, Wynn?
Well, Brian Dan is absolutely right, Imelda. You know, Justin Trudeau is a total globalist. This guy, he doesn't care about anybody's life. Your life, my life doesn't mean anything to him. He wants to, you know, he's spending billions of dollars funding terrorists, you know, Islamic countries. You know, try to build up like more armies. He's putting like a lot of money on NDP and liberals, especially like try to brainwash our kids in schools, right? They want to bring up like Arabic language in abroad too. They were they have a plan, right? The program I believe like I started like a couple of days ago. They want to teach our kids how to read and write like Arabic. So what about like native language? They have been here like before us. Right? We gotta put their native language first instead of the Arabic thing. That is not good. But it's clearly they want to control everybody so that you and I can be can abide their law, can live under them. So they cannot do us. We are willing to fight. We are freedom fighters. What about our kids? We are working people, right? Our kids go to school, and then they have been taught by this new order agenda thing, right, in school by the teachers. That thing we need to stand up to, right? That thing is our home issue. We gotta get rid of our home issues first before we attack the main thing. But the main thing is we need to take the liberals and the NDP out from the office. These people are evil people. Yeah, they will destroy everybody. I would say not Conservative Party. I would say Maxine, PPC will be the one who's gonna solve all this problem.
Well, you know, the good thing is we're seeing it happen in Canada now. We just saw the Liberals kicked out of Quebec for the first time in how many years. They've gone to progressive or to a conservative government. We've seen what happened in Ontario with Doug Ford. We see what's going on in Quebec right now with Jason Finney. We see a rise of conservatism across the country right now because Canadians are starting to become aware. Enough of us are starting to become aware that this really represents a real threat to the future of this country. I guess our biggest challenge here, gentlemen, is to get the sheeple awake. Because I honestly believe that if most Canadians really understood what was going on in their country, we get the apathetic Canadians to get off their butts and get involved. But you're right, Dan. Most Canadians are apathetic. They just seem to be lacking testicles. I don't know how else to say it, but they do. Yeah. And to me, man, it's like I know, knowing what I know right now, I myself can't walk away from trying to get people aware because to me it's my duty. This country has given me a great life. I mean, we are living in one of the greatest countries in the world, and now we're seeing it being destroyed. Well, if that's not worth fighting for, guys, I don't know what is. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, what I think the biggest problem and the reason the apathetic is an issue is that Canadians haven't experienced any real hardships. And they don't see the big picture. They don't see that there's an agenda here. and that it's to take over the Americas, and it's 30 years in, or 40 years in progress. Mm-hmm. The Arabic world really wants, and it's not just them, China too. There's a lot of big powers out there that see Canada as a jewel in the rough, and they want to exploit it. So we are going to be targeted by all kinds of people, bad people, that want to rape our country. And they'll use such things as religious beliefs to help move that agenda forward. And I honestly believe that as far as the PC and the Liberals and the NDP, I think that if Scheer is elected, you're going to see another 4 years of Trudeau-like politics.
Yep.
And I honestly believe that there shouldn't be it's a divided vote thing where people are saying that Bernier is dividing the vote. Why divide the vote? Let's just all stand behind Bernier, then problem solved. And I honestly believe of the four evils, that Bernier is probably the lesser one, because I like what he's saying. It's mostly what patriots like to hear. And I think he's maybe the answer to saving Canada, like Trump is doing to the USA.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that really hate Trump, but you know what? I kind of sit back and I've watched what the man has done. There's some stuff that he has done that I don't like, but in generality, I don't see anything really negative that he's done as far as his people in his country. But as far as Trudeau goes, since he's been in power now for 3 years, I haven't seen one thing that he's done that's benefited Canada. Not one single item. I defy somebody here to put up a point that he really has done something beneficial to Canada. He's destroying our economy. He's undermining our culture. He's undermining our social system. He is just absolutely taking this country apart.
Well, that's where, on the Trump topic, that's where Trump is very different than Trudeau. Trump really loves his Canada, or I mean his country rather, and is trying to pay his country back. He doesn't have to. He's rich. He could have just moved on with his life and enjoyed his money. But he felt that he wanted to pay back to his country. And those that don't like Trump, I believe, are confusing his personal life with his political aspect. The fact of the matter is that Trump's personal life, which has been checkered, to say the least, leaves to be desired. But when you look at his fiscal responsibilities, he's doing a great job. So I don't look at a person's personal life as to what he does for his country or his town or his province or whatever. I think that's where you've got to judge a person, is on his political values rather than his personal life. I mean, let's face it, one's personal life, that's why we use personal as the word, it's their business and nobody else's.
Well, to say that he hasn't done a lot of good things, I think you'd have to have your head in the sand, because I've looked at a lot of things that he has done, and a lot of it's just common sense approach to supporting his own people. So I know I hear a lot of kickback against him, but you made a good point there that personal life is personal life, and the guy is a businessman. He's been in business all his life. Sure, there is a little bit of nefarious information in his background about his connection to the Rothschilds, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I have to tend to agree with you, Dan, that I see him doing nothing but good for the American people right now. So, but in the same mouthful, I will stay outside the box. I'm not 100% supporting the guy, because I always believe that there's a deeper agenda being played. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Well, that's a very strong possibility. That's a very strong possibility. We know that there's an entire shadow government going on. We know that the globalist arena is a very big arena, and many corrupt people with lots of money are involved, and they have a lot of power, and maybe Trump is manipulated and manipulating us. Who knows?
Well, exactly. So you know, far, right you now, know. Dan, we're looking at absolute turmoil going to be unfolding in the States as these seal indictments are unsealed and all these top dogs all of a sudden get arrested. Well, you're going to see a state of martial law declared in the United States of America. And when that happens, there is nothing to stop a man from completely flipping on everything that he has said or done. And you I gotta stay outside the box because, like I said, those thoughts have gone through my mind a lot of times. Is there a giant ploy being played on us? Is he supporting, is getting enough support from the American people that when he does declare martial law, which I believe will happen, if these indictments are unsealed, then you could be putting yourself into a situation where all your life, all your rights and all your privileges and any ability of you being able to push back against what the government doing is going to be taken away from you. So there's nothing at that point from stopping a man from completely flipping on everything that he said. So I've got to stay outside the box right now. I have to, because I see that as, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but we really got to remember that, you know, there's a big party and there's a big play being played on the human race. And if he's part of it, then he's just playing his part. My thoughts on that. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you something. I got to agree with what you're saying because it's a totally, totally valid point. It could be a big ploy. He could do a 180. Let's face back, too, that once they implement martial law, there is no more elections. So you've kind of put yourself in a position to stay
totally
in
trusting.
Power. As long as there's civil unrest, you get to stay in power. Many are thinking that Trudeau might be even playing that. That's why he's putting, really making the left fight against the right more than it ever has.
Right.
Because if there is civil unrest, he could declare martial law, and then we can't throw him out.
Well, if the United States was to go into a state of martial law, then War Measures Act would be read in Canada within a couple hours. People don't realize that what's happening down there is directly going to affect us. They think that it's down in America, it's not going to affect us. Well, all of a sudden, boom, the War Measures Act is read, and all of society goes into a complete lockdown. And at that point, what's to stop these people from maybe flipping on us? Oh, we were just kidding, guys. We got another plan. Here it is. You know, at that point, we're powerless. So a lot of things that I think about all the time and things we got to think about. What do you think there, Wynn?
I think that the martial law thing, it will come, like, later. We're not in third world country, right? Third world countries, they have, like, they are told they rule by, you know, dictatorship system, right? Dictatorial system. So our Canada, our United States is not like that. There's a lot of people out there, you know, they have guns like patriots. They do. They have, like, tanks. They have a lot of kind of things. You know, even United, U.S. Army alone, I don't think they can take all of them out because they know this kind of thing. Martial law is very tough, situation for the U.S. government. They want to bring the, you know, gun control. That is the reason so that they can swipe like all, you know, everybody, you know, so that they can, they want to rule by fear, right? That's why gun is the only thing they're afraid of. They know that, NRA, like, they already know that a lot of patriots, they have a lot of guns. They're scared of them. And then a long time ago, they tried to, you know, they tried to push, like, gun control too. Remember? Like, FBI, CIA, they got killed. Remember?
Yeah.
I would say about 15 years ago, they tried to do that. And then they, didn't succeed because of this thing. They know that. Even U.S. Army, bring, like, the whole, like, army, right? There's a lot of, they call them a redneck. Actually, they're not redneck. They are just, freedom loggers. They are, like, a patriot. They are just defending themselves about martial law thing. I don't think it's going to happen. But one thing I can tell you that, you know, they will bring, like, more gun control. Like, they will stage, like, something and try to push gun control thing so that they can take the power. I don't think that Democrats going to, you know, they're not going to back up their own plan. These people are, like, psychopaths, right? The mind of psychopaths is, like, way different from us. These people, they don't know how to give up. They want to do more. They don't care how much money they have to spend in order to gain the power. They will do it. Yeah. They will push it. You know, this type of people are they very ugly people. You know, especially you know, when they're in power. When they are not, you know, we still have to watch them out. But to be honest with you, we got to speed like all of them out, you know, from the power. You know, thank God, like Hillary didn't win the seat as president. Otherwise, like we are like in trouble. This lady, you believe me or not, she would start like World War III against like Russia and China. That is, you know, that would be 100%. You know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
yeah.
You know, on that subject, there's a power struggle right now, it seems, and it's on a global scale between good and bad, between evil and good. And the thing that concerns me is that the evil will do anything without limits to accomplish its agenda. Where good has limits because good gives you limitations. Good people will rather, they rather stand back and accept and conform than to fight back. So there's a real danger here on the global scale, because if evil continues to grow and it has no boundaries to accomplish its narrative and its agenda, how are we going to stop this as good people that have boundaries? So, you know, this is stuff that patriots really have to think about. Like Wynn is saying, well, there's people out there that are armed. Sure there is. But the fact is that it seems like the government, and especially the Canadian government, I know that just recently here in Sudbury, the police chiefs and the high-ranking officers just got a big raise. But the smaller police got a small raise. And we know this to be true because one of the police officers made a complaint about this on Facebook and said, why are the chiefs and high-ranking officers getting a 30% raise and we only got a 5% raise? It's not fair. And he was suspended for making those comments. Probably under with pay, of course. But the fact is that the government seems to be paying these high-ranking officers and stuff great amounts of money. Police, it's not it's not a secret. They're very well paid. Mm-hmm. And the high-ranking police officers are very, very well paid. And these are people that will accept, and they're the conformists, that will listen to what their government tells them to do and execute what their government tells them to do because they're for fear of losing these high paying jobs. So an agenda does come, if there is ever an order given that the police, I don't know if it's a rumor, but on Facebook, they're saying that Trudeau wants to give the power to the RCMP and to the police to walk into your house, even if you're not home, and to check your computers and seize information. This could be propaganda. But somebody out there is accusing Trudeau of mentioning this. You know, we're in troubling times. And you know, like you said yourself, Barry, too many people are asleep. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what's it going to take, guys? What's it going to take for – how many Canadians are going to have to be murdered before Canadians wake up? I mean, look at Maria Shen in Burnaby, murdered by a Syrian refugee that came in under Trudeau's program. The two girls that were murdered on the Danforth, same thing. And then what'd they find? 42 kilograms of carpenthanol in the brother's house of the Danforth shooter. That's enough carpenthanol to kill everybody in Canada about six times over. What's going on in our country, guys? How much trouble are we actually in? What limits do these people hold? What extremes are they willing to go to perpetrate their agenda? They're pretty, pretty scary, scary situation we're into right now. And I just hope Canadians can wake up and we can stop this, because if we don't, our country, like I said, is going to change fundamentally. And you know what? Our kids are going to curse us. They are, because we know about this now. There is no denying the information that's in front of our faces, man. How can you deny? If you look at the Canadian government for half an hour, if you look at anything that Trudeau has done in the last 3 years, none of it is sensible. None of it makes any common sense for Canadians. You really got to ask yourself a lot of hard questions. We all got to start looking in the mirror the way I see it, guys. Go ahead.
Well, he has no money for Canadians. He has no money for our military. He has no money for our veterans. He has no money for our elderly. But yet he has money for foreign countries. And some of those countries clearly hate us. They don't like our way of life. They don't like our culture. They don't like us as a people. And they look at us as the enemy, and they would like to conquer us. And these are people and governments that our government is funding. What's wrong with that?
Well, you know what, Diane? If people don't think there's cells right now in Canada waiting for the word go, then you really don't understand the depth of the problem that we're in. You got to understand that the government is protecting these people that are allowing these cells to perpetrate. These people are coming in mass. We see what's going on in Europe right now. Really, folks, all you really got to do is take a look at Germany and what is going on over there. You know, I said this last week on my show. I sat down with four German people that live in a little town. They live in a little town an hour and a half north of Berlin, and they're scared to walk the streets at night because their women are getting raped. Well, the same thing is coming here. They're quite a bit ahead of us, but really you only have to look at Europe to see what multiculturalism is doing to their society. And do we want that in Canada? I don't think so. I'm not a racist person. Canada was founded on immigration. But people came to Canada knowing that they had to work, that they didn't have a free ticket when they got here. They came to our country wanting to adopt our values, wanting to work, wanting to make a better life for their family. But now you have people walking in unvetted, criminal backgrounds. They have no way of vetting these people because the countries they're coming from don't carry records. And they're walking into our border and absolutely destroying our systems. And it's being allowed to go on by our government. Right now, there is cells in Canada waiting to go, guys. I mean, take a look at the one down in New Mexico that was busted there about 3 months ago and what they were training their children to do and how it was covered up. Crazy what's going on, man, but we got to stop it. The three stages of jihad.
Right, Brother Barry, this new order, their last resource, is like an open border policy. These people, they are losing their war, like a war, you know, their new order agenda. You know, a lot of world leaders, such as Donald Trump, such as HGCU, you know, such as Vladimir Putin, they are fighting hard, like, against these people. The only thing they can gain control and power is through the open border policy. They try their best, you know, they try to take, you know, the oil, like I would say, they tried to take over Syria too. It didn't work out. You know, they lost, you know, the ISIS, remember? They established as a, you know, Islamic State not long ago. And then they all fell off. They all like, you know, diminished, right? Because of the, there's a lot of like good guys out there. They are fighting hard against New World Order because Al-Qaeda, ISIS, whatever, they're working for the same leaders. They're funding them like, you know, I would say billions of cash, billions of dollars. They're funding, including Iran too. No, Iran is, you know, nobody telling us Iran is like in a chaotic situation. And we got friends. Thank God we have like so many friends on the social media, such as Facebook, right? They, you know, the videos are leaked out, and then the mainstream media in the West, they, you know, they don't show us nothing. So, you know, a lot of people don't know what's going on. But to be honest with you, you know, they think that open border policy is the only thing they can, you know, maintain their own power. But it's not going to work out because the way you're saying that, how are we going to wake people up? Actually, we are doing pretty good job. A lot of Canadians, they are waking up. We gain more patriots right now, so which is a good thing. So the only thing what we need to do is get together and elect the right government. I would say Maxine is the only one who's going to clean up. We cannot trust, like, you know, Andrew Scheer. We cannot trust other party except PPC. You know, the reason... Yeah, the reason we need to pick it right, you know, the right leader right now, because every single day a lot of our illegal crossers, they coming going to our Canada, and then they're living in, you know, hotel motel, right? And then we got a lot of homeless people, you know, we got no job. Jobs before, yeah, they were BB, and then after, like, I'm living in AB, Alberta, right? You know, like a couple years ago, there was a huge fire, Wi-Fi happened in Fort Mac. A lot of people, like, they run away. You know, they end up living on the street. They try to find a job in here because they can't. Over there is no job, I was saying, because they shut down the oil field. And then they end up coming here, and there's no job. They can't find job, and then they end up sleeping on the street. So the only thing we can help them out is, like, good people like us, like true patriots. We, you know, go out sometime in the night, sometime on long weekends, help them out when... when I, you know, we ask around, like, if we have, like, any job available for them to work, yeah, we help them out like that too, right? But our NDP, they don't care, like, about Canadians. All they care about is, like, you know, refugee, immigrants. That's all they care about, okay? I've been living in Canada for 24 years, right? I came to Canada as a refugee. I worked my ass off, like, you know, for two decades, right? Those refugees can be like me too. Canada, like, you know, supposed to be for everybody. This this land is, you know, truly safe and free. And these people, you know, I can't say like these people, but that was, you know, that is liberals' fault. Bringing all kinds of people, like, they don't like bring the real refugee. They're bringing like the people they want to bring in. That's why, like, we're losing our freedom. We're losing, like, I don't know, one sooner or later, you know, if we don't get the right government in 4 years, by next year, you know, we're going to lose another 4 years. Another 4 years gone, I would say, like, screw it. That is a third world country right there. I would say civil war.
No, this is a fight we can't, at this point, when we can't lose this fight, okay? Because you know what I know, and Dan knows, and anybody that's really following what's going on in our country, if we get another 4 years of this tyranny that we're experiencing right now, then our country is going to change, and it's going to change forever. And we won't be able to reverse it. Right now, we can stop this. And you're right, when we need the right people in, Andrew Scheer is not an option. Justin Trudeau is not an option. Jamin Singh is not an option. There is really right now only one man that's really kind of calling it like it is. And again, you know, is he part of a giant ploy? I don't know, but what the man is saying, what he's saying right now resonates with me, and it's resonating with a lot of Canadians. We're in a fight for our lives right now. And I believe Maxime's heart is in the right place. So he's getting my support right now, period. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I absolutely think the same. I like what Maxime is saying. Mind you, there's no rush. We have a year to decide. We can watch him, keep watching what he's doing. And so, you know, there's no rush on actually making a firm decision now. But right now, yeah, I am standing behind Maxime Bernier. For those that think that, you know, that we're not going to have the issues that are happening in Sweden and France and England and Germany with their mass immigration problem, fact is we are not immune. There's no way that Canada is immune. And mass immigration doesn't work. And if you think that mass immigration works, ask our First Nations how it worked out for them. Mm. They're now segregated on reserves. They've become second-class citizens with not even good drinking water in their own country. That's how mass immigration worked out for them. What happens with mass immigration is it waters down the host culture. And right now, the host culture is Canadians. And when I say Canadians, they can be Chinese, they can be Afghanistani, they can come from anywhere they want in the world. But if they came in through the front door, they are illegal Canadian citizens, they go to work every day, and they pay their taxes and are not a burden on our way of life and actually embrace our way of life and contribute to our way of life. Those are the Canadians I'm speaking about. And those Canadians deserve to be protected by this mass immigration.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like I said, really, I've got people in Europe that I talk to all the time now. And, you know, when I first started looking at the problems they had over there, I got pushback from a few other people that do online radio that I was kind of overplaying it, but I'm not. You really got to take a look at what's going on over there. They're basically at a state of almost civil war. And that same thing is going to happen to Canada if we keep going the way we are. What do you think? When you know what? We're gone over here for a few minutes, but my producer has probably let me go for an extra few minutes. And I think, somebody else wanted to call in. I think Dunn Ryan is trying to call me right now, but if Dunn, if you want to call into the station,
he's got to call my Skype.
You got to call, super big guy man on Skype. So if you look for him on Skype, super big bad man, that's Steve. Send him a request and he'll pull you into the show. So, yeah, you know what, gentlemen, we haven't even touched the surface of what this government has done to Canada. Literally, we haven't even touched the surface of what's gone on here. in the last 3 years. And like I said, my biggest, you're right, Wynn. I am going to agree with you that I do see a rise in patriotism in Canada. But at this point, I really feel we have to accelerate that, because the harder we push back, the more they're going to push back. And this is a war that we can't lose. We have to win this war. We have no choice.
Robert Barry, the way I see it, like we doing like a great job. I would say that we gotta be more active this time, because the election time is very close by now, right? So we gotta push. We gotta put more energy into it, and then we spread the words. And then who to choose right now? To be honest with you, a lot of like conservatives, you know, conservatives, they acting like liberals now. Like between like CPC and PPC, they are fighting each other. If you don't believe him, you ask Brother Dan about it. He will tell you.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that, Dan.
Yeah. No, he's absolutely right. That's where it's headed. That's for sure. Sorry, I just had another call come in and interrupt me there, and I'm having a hard time with service out here. I'm at camp actually. It's beautiful Northern Ontario, overlooking a beautiful lake. Really enjoying Thanksgiving weekend. I wanted to take this opportunity to wish all that are out there listening to this great show a happy Thanksgiving to all the Canadians, all the patriots. This is really something to be thankful for, is this beautiful country that we live in. And fact of the matter is, if you like this country, if you like the culture in this country, and if you want to preserve it, you're going to have to stop being apathetic, and you're going to have to start being active. Because even though some people think that rallies and all these events aren't doing anything, fact of the matter is, they are spreading awareness. And once we get the numbers up big enough that we are a visual
presence,
offensive, once the government sees that there's many, many people are rising together and are standing against them, then we can bring change. And it can be done in a positive and peaceful way, but all it has to be is visual. The government is not going to be scared of a few dozen people showing up at rallies and opposing certain people like Linda Sarsour. You need numbers. You need visual opposition.
Well, I think we could start by getting the Quran classified as hate speech. That would be number one. Because if there ever was a piece of literature that was hate speech, that book is it. And I urge people to read it and understand what their doctrine is. Because this is an enemy that has infiltrated our government, is in our society now. And their end game is not one that I want for my children, guys. At all.
No.
And I see it coming. And we must at this point stand. Because there's going to come a point in time that if we don't stand up now, the ability to stand up will be taken away. We see the attacks coming on us conservatives. I'm expecting an attack from the government any day now, because there's things they could come after me for. And when they want to silence me, they will. But until that time, we must speak loud. We must get this message out. We must get the millennials involved. We must sit down at our dinner tables at night and start talking about these issues, even though they're not things we want to talk about. A lot of people don't want to even think that this stuff is really going on. But at this point in history, look, if I hurt your feelings by telling you a few things, I'm going to give you a Kleenex. I'll make sure I have a box of Kleenex with me. But it's time to take off the gloves, guys. It's time to start getting mad. And if you're not mad at this point, I don't know what to say to you. I really don't. Because I am pissed. Go ahead, Wynn. We're going to shut the show out here in a couple minutes.
So. Yeah, Ryan on Barry.
Oh, Ryan, how you doing, bud? We're not going to shut the show out. Ryan's joining us, and we're going to let him share a few thoughts. How you doing, Dunn?
Hey, good. I'm good.
So what do you think of this conversation, my friend?
Everything you guys are saying is pretty much spot on. I mean, I can't disagree with anything you guys are saying. I really like what Dan just said there. We're all going to have to start getting involved. If we really love our country, I mean, we're all going to have to step up, and it's up to us to spread the word and get other people with us. We have strength in numbers, and that's what we need right now.
Yeah.
Well, the numbers are growing, guys. They are. We got to reach the hearts of our fellow Canadians. You know, it's, to me, one of the most powerful statements that we can make to people is that, this isn't something that you should do. This is absolutely your duty as a citizen of your country, exactly. If you love our country, because I do. I love Canada. I love what I've grown up in. I'm 64 years old now, and I've had a good life in Canada. It has given me lots of great experiences, lots of abundance, never wanting for anything. Now I see that being taken away from my children. I am going to fight to the death to stop that. And we really got to get that attitude into Canadians' hearts. Yeah. That this
one man I talked to,
we can't lose this, guys. We cannot lose this, period. Go ahead.
One man I talked to said it the best, and he said, we've got a lot of great heroes in this country. The only problem is they don't know it yet.
I brought it back. In my opinion, okay, this fight is going to be a long fight. You know how New World Order elites are. They got money, okay? Mm-hmm. They will exploit our kids. If they cannot defeat us today, they will defeat us like tomorrow. They are that type of people. They don't care how much money they have to spend, you know, to gain power, from us. They would do it. You know, okay, next year election, we kicked out, let's say Liberal Party and, NDP Party, right? What about, the next, election? They will buy people off, right? A lot of people are willing to, sell their soul out and then for money. These people, this thing, we gotta fight, for generations. I would say it's worth it. We keep our kids close, and then make sure that try to get information from them, what their teachers are teaching them, in school, and then try to get close to them, what they're doing to our kids. That is very important too, because let's say we win the fight today, we will lose the fight tomorrow because our kids will turn against us. That is for sure. That is exactly what they are doing for so many years, but we didn't keep an eye on it, and then now we are fighting against against so many brainwashed kids on the street, young guys at rallies. We are fighting each other, and then some of the kids we thought that they got paid by the other groups, right? Actually, they use they were brainwashed by the teachers, by the professors, by crazy people who wants to take over us, right? These people they will use our kids constantly. Well, continuously, they will use our kids. And then one day, you never know when they have, larger number. And then they will, I don't know, we will lose the fight. But for us not to lose the fight, we got to spread the word until you die, you have to fight for it. Because, all the elites, they have been there, for over a century, right? This fight is not today's fight. This fight is we've been fighting for. Yeah. We have been fighting for a long, long time. I'm talking to people like us. Right. If we want to win the fight, against them totally, we gotta beat more people like us, the real patriots. Make sure they are open-minded, willing to work with each other for our common goal. This is what we need. Number is very important. When we get the numbers, we get unity. When we get unity, what happens? We get everybody together for we can fight against them more easily.
Yeah. Right now we need them. There's more of us right now than there's of them.
Yeah.
Do you know why you hear and you can feel the passion in Winnie's voice and the way Winnie speaks? Do you know why you feel that passion and you can hear that passion? Because Winnie is an immigrant that lived the Burmese war, that lived the war in Burma. He's experienced where things can lead to if you don't keep him in check and if you don't stop evil in its track before it spreads. So that's why Winnie, he's just, by the way, he's our new Alberta leader for Canadian Combat Coalition for Alberta. Winnie is the Alberta president. Dunn Ryan McLean is our Ontario vice president. So we're spreading across Canada like a wildfire, which is a good thing. But that's why we know Winnie's doing such a great job in Alberta, because he's passionate about Canada. He's probably more patriotic than Canadians born and raised here. And that's the kind of immigration that we must embrace and accept into Canada, is immigrants that have come here to enjoy our way of life and who have embraced our way of life and who are willing to fight for our way of life.
Not destroy it.
That's right. Thanks, Winnie. Keep up the good work, buddy. It's an honor to be working with you.
So, gentlemen, I'm going to shut the show out here in a couple minutes. We've gone 20 minutes over. I'm gonna pass it around the table here and let you have a last thought and share any information with my listeners that where you can be contacted. And it's been a pleasure having you gentlemen on. I'll start with Wynn. Hey, Wynn, are you there? Okay, done.
I'd just like to say a couple of things. Canadian Combat Coalition is ever expanding, and we're always looking for new members to bring new things to the table. We're always trying to get rallies going and attend other rallies as well. Anything that Canada should be getting behind and supporting, we're pretty much there or trying to get there. So it'd be a great help to, you know, bring these like-minded individuals together and get everyone on the same page. And as much as we want to trust one another, it doesn't hurt to do your own research, and you know, the truth will kind of reveal itself.
Thanks for the word. Well said, well sir. Said. Wynn?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, last thoughts for our listeners, bud.
Yeah, Brother Barry, you know, we gotta talk more often. Like, you know, if we pick like a Saturday, that'd be good. Like Sunday, like sometimes like people like you know, they have like something to do because the next day they gotta go to work. Thank God, like you know, this weekend is a long weekend, so it's not that bad, right? We gotta talk more, and so that we can wake people up. You believe me, a lot of people like are waking up, and then they are start standing up like behind the scene, because a lot of people they are afraid, right? Because they're not like us. For us, like for me, like you know, I was only 12 years old. I carry AK-47, killing people already, right? At that age, I'm supposed to be like going to school and then learn some, you know, learn to read and learn to write at that age. Right? That's, you know, for me, freedom and democracy is the only thing I live for, because, I got a wife, I got kids, I got so many nieces, so many, nephews, I got mom, I got sisters, brothers, you name it. I'm from a huge family, right?
Right.
So without freedom and democracy, I know how life's gonna be, because I'm from a third world country, Burma, you know, until now doesn't have a freedom and democracy. Why people living in, you know, living in fear and poverty? Because there is no freedom. When our freedom is totally taken away from us, you know what happened to us? You know, we are not like, we're going to live like a dog, like animal. We're not going to be like, live a life like a human being anymore. That's why, you know, we keep it up, you know, a good work with the talk show and make sure, you know, talk to people to work with us. We are very, our C3 is very open-minded group. We're willing to work with anybody. Or like, you know, anybody means like like-minded people. So, you know, when we have more members and more numbers, and we go out on the street, demand something. And then when we have more numbers, right, demanding something like on the street, when our government like seeing things like that, what happened? You know, they pay attention to it. With a few numbers on the street, it's like, you know, like crazy people standing up on the street, you know, yelling and screaming, right? So what we need is like, you know, talk to each other more, make sure we gotta put like our energy into work, Carter, and then take a little bit of time, not a problem, you know, make sure we get more people to get close to us. Because right now we have a problem with the communication with them. A lot of people just talking on Facebook, but when it comes to reaction, you know, they don't want to show up. But we can make them to show up, but we gotta, you know, talk to them like, you know, treat them in a nice way. But we have, our patrons have a problem with the communication skills.
Yeah, that's a subject we could talk about on a show for a couple hours, Wynn. Thanks for your words, and I hope people heed them. You being from the situation you were in, and I'm starting to understand your background a little bit more, I urge people to heed his words. Dan, last thoughts for us?
Well, I just want to thank you very much, Barry, for allowing some of the C3 members and myself the opportunity to come on your great show and spread a little bit of that awareness that we're talking about. And try to urge people to give up the apathetic thing and to actually start attending and being part of the visual opposition that is much needed for governments to change their agendas. You got to remember, the government works for us. We don't work for them. So we got to show them when we're not happy with their performance. Because if we don't speak out and we don't show our government that we're not happy with their performance, they'll continue to do what they're doing. And right now, it's about eroding the middle class, the making everybody poor, and making all the other people rich. So with that said, I thank you again, Barry. Great guy. You're an awesome patriot. I commend what you do 100%. And I want to wish all the patriots and all the Canadians out there a really happy Thanksgiving.
Well, gentlemen, you know, it's been a pleasure today to be joined by three true Canadian patriots. And I feel a passion and our concern in this room. And at this point, we really do have to put the pedal to the metal because our country is in peril. And what I see coming for my children and my grandchildren and everybody else's children and grandchildren brings tears to my eyes every day when I realize the future that we're laying down and allowing to be perpetrated in our country. This is probably the most important issue in my life right now. And myself, I can't think of anything more important right now to do with my life than wear my T-shirt every day and engage in conversations with everybody that I can possibly engage in conversations with. We really, really do have to get busy. And you're right, guys. Sitting at home on the internet and posting links on Facebook isn't the answer. You have to get into these people's faces. You have to physically get involved. And I'm trying to walk the walk when I talk the talk. So I hope you all do the same thing. You know, this has been a really great show this week. I really want to say thanks to Nick for joining me in the first hour. Great feedback on our show, sir. And I know that people want to get you back here real soon, so I'll make sure that we do get you back in the next couple, 3 weeks. And I want to thank my guests for the second hour for joining me. It's been
thank you, Barry.
A very uplifting show, and I've enjoyed this immensely.
Yeah.
What else can I say?
Have a good weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You guys all have a great Thanksgiving day and go spend it, I hope, with the rest of your family. My son is making me a big turkey dinner. I'm going over there at 5 o'clock for turkey and all the stuffing and lemon meringue pie.
Yahoo!
So anyways, guys, thanks for joining in. Thanks for joining in on the show.
All right. Take care.
I want to say thanks to Steve for producing my show, and I want to say thanks to PRER for allowing me this platform to share my thoughts every week. Thanks for joining us, guys, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. I got Vinny, the mouth that roars, Vinny Eastwood, joining me next week. Don't miss that show. He's an awesome guy, and I love talking with him. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. Bye for now.